Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. Okay, guys, I know I said it was three parts, but hear me out. Be on my side. I'm a cult leader. I'm joking, but I felt I couldn't tell the story of the Unification Church and Sungyeong Moon and his offspring and influence without speaking to a man named Teddy Hose. A man who grew up in the church as a boy, grew up with the Moon children in Tarrytown, New York, and whose family left, but not without suffering some unimaginable tragedy. This is Teddy Hose, the face you'll most likely recognize if you watch any prominent documentary about the Moonies. He has a story to tell, and he has a hell of a reason why we should listen to it. This is the last deep dive episode into the cult, an insider's perspective, truths never shared and stories never before now told publicly. I mean, kind of in other documentaries, but I feel like Teddy and I are buds, and you want to know why? Guess what? So we finish our interview Monday, so because of the Wondery early release thing, it's hard for me to say, but let's just say 6 days before Wondery people hear this, another week after. I'm not doing math right now, guys. But basically, we do this interview on Monday, so after the Sunday release, because I had messaged him as I was like finishing the final episode, and I was like watching his like heartbreaking story on another documentary, and I was like, I can't not talk to him. And so I reached out to him at the 11th hour on the day I'm supposed to release, and I knew it probably wasn't going to work out that night. He actually did respond, but I did not see it until the next day. And that day on Monday, I was like, I got to talk to him, whether it's a bonus episode or another part four, I need to speak to him. So we have had a wonderful chat Monday evening, and I decided that I was going to use that chat for this episode this week. But what's crazy is, so my best friend, my childhood best friend, I mean, I let's not rank people, but like, since we were kids, little kids, we've been best friends, we've gone on the road and done comedy together, like, best friend. Sabrina Danzel, if you get a chance, get to know her. Maybe she'll be on this podcast at some point. Just my closest of close. So she had commented on our Seven Deadly Sinners podcast Instagram and said that she was roommates with one of the Moonies. She had commented on the Instagram, and either Greg or Kate told me that she was like, oh, I was roommates with the Moonies. And I had remembered that Sabrina had told me that like a long time ago. But it was before, like, I knew of the Moonie cult name, but I didn't know really any more than that until I did this episode. So, whatever. She comments. A week goes by because I, you know, did 100 parts on this cult. So, you know, who knows? Was that in June? I don't know. But she comments, and I don't think a ton of it because I'm just, like, plowing through the research and trying to, like, structure the episodes. And then I speak to Teddy on Monday. And then the next day, on Tuesday, Sabrina and I, that's her name, we were just catching up in general on the phone. And I was like, oh, yeah, you said you were roommates of the Moonies. I remember you telling me that a long time ago, but whatever. So she starts telling me the story of who some of her roommates were. I guess essentially it was just one roommate was in it, but you'll understand in a second. So she starts explaining, like, you know, who they were, and she says the first name of the roommate, and then she says Hose is the last name. And I was like, whoa, sorry, what? And she's like, yeah, his brother is Teddy, that went on the documentary. I was like, I just spoke to Teddy for 2 hours last night. Like, this is insane. She goes, yeah, I've met Teddy a couple times. Like, he might not remember me, but like, yeah, I lived with his brother. And so it was just a really strange, full circle, crazy world. So then I texted Teddy because now, you know, everyone I interview, I consider my best friend at this point. They might want a restraining order on me, but, Who knows? But I texted Teddy and I was like, do you remember a girl named Sabrina, blah, blah, blah? And he was blown away too. Like, yeah, they like met in Seattle and yeah, it's a pretty small, pretty crazy, cool world. So there's a reason why I spoke to Teddy and there's a reason why you are going to hear from him tonight. He's incredibly introspective, sweet, funny, and he's really doing good work trying to expose the cult mentality, the cult he was in, and also not shaming people who have fallen into a circumstance like his. Granted, he was a kid raised in it, but his parents were very young when they were sucked into the cult of Sun Myung Moon and the Unification Church. So without further ado, this is Teddy Hose.
Okay. So I was born in Washington, D.C. My dad was the pastor there. My parents joined like in the 60s. They were kind of approached as when they were entering adulthood and both stationed in San Francisco. My mom's Japanese, so she flew from Japan to San Francisco. And then they got an arranged marriage there. Well, I heard actually that they kind of tinkered it a little to like, anyway. It's not all 100% arranged all the time. But anyway, you know, it was a smaller church back then. And so, like, they kind of actually pushed it. And, you know, I actually learned way later that, oh, a lot of those people chose each other, the earliest members, because, I don't know, things weren't so hard-lined back then. And eventually, you know, my family left because things got too hard-lined and too power-hungry and corrupt and, yeah. Anyway, that's like to make a complex story short right there. But my family moved around quite a bit. So we were in D.C. when I was born. I don't remember anything because I think we moved out when I was three. And then I grew up in New York. My parents were stationed to work at the New Yorker Hotel, which the Moon family owns to this day, actually. They might lose it soon. Actually, there's some articles that I keep up with, you know, every now and then, because they're losing properties left and right because the church is losing money. But anyway, there was something called the World Mission Department, where basically they managed the Unification Church or Mooney missionaries who flew around the world, went to poor countries and whatnot, and, you know, try to witness to people. It's kind of like, you know, when you hear about old Christian missionaries throughout history and really like they're kind of colonizing and like taking resources, like it's kind of that too. But my parents were, you know, they didn't know the bigger picture.
At first, when Teddy says resources, I had assumed he meant that they went to those countries to perhaps take their natural resources there, like oil or, I don't know, sugar. But I find out what he meant was humans were resources to them. They were free labor and free recruiters of others into the cult.
I take that back. I'm not so sure about resources, but I guess what I mean by resources is they just brought more people into the cult who could work for, like, you know, for free or next to nothing. You know, that's a lot of church members.
I see.
Yeah, they live on the poverty line and It's human trafficking. Human trafficking is what fuels and you know, spiritual sales, like fraud, selling these items that are supposed to have a lot of spiritual significance and they somehow can like win people over that way. Or anyway, it's a lot of people in good faith and who are like, you know, who are pulled into this movement. Thinking they're doing a good thing and they want to give everything to it, you know, after so much indoctrination. And those are the venture capitalists, basically, of the Unification Church.
I can't believe in all my research of this and like another podcast I have worked on, and I work on this case about this girl that was sex trafficked or whatever, that human trafficking didn't pop in my mind is what they're doing, but that is exactly what they're doing. They are trafficking.
Yeah, because most people think human trafficking is like sex, you know, or like sex people who are coerced into that kind of industry. But no, ours is more kind of, it just looks like church volunteer work. But people will live in a van for years and just like sell, you know, little trinkets door to door around the country, around the world. Yeah, that's how people get.
Can I ask you how they possibly made that much money on that? Number one, that's one question. Number two, did your parents ever get paid? So first question is, how were they making, I was reading about, like, they were selling roses on the street and stuff. Like, how did he amass billions? Granted, I know he, like, bought into other companies and all of that, but, like, how did those small acts, those small peddling on the streets turn into money that could purchase a New Yorker hotel or the Washington Times? Like, that is a little confusing to me.
There's some theories. There's actually some articles in the New York Times, like investigative articles from the 70s, that talk about how the Unification Church is actually, like, the church is like a shell company for what is actually a South Korean dictatorship coup led by Kim Jong-pil and the Korean CIA. Because the right-hand man of Reverend Moon was, what's his name? Colonel Pak, we called him. Yeah, Pak. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's Bohin
Pak.
He's the one that took
Thank
on his
you.
Own style. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, he was actually in the Korean CIA. So, if you dig into the research, like, there's this explaining. Basically, it kind of started as, like, a coup, and they were, like, putting all this, you know, money into it. It's kind of like in America, you know, how, like, the Koch brothers were, like, funding, you know, the Tea Party and stuff like that, like these radical groups. So
uh-huh.
It's kind of a similar thing, you know, and I can believe that because I've seen it in my own country now, which is awful. But yeah, there's that. And there's also that he actually influenced one of the in the 50s or something. He got one of the biggest insurance companies in South Korea to join, and I believe that's where Mrs. Che, like the one who had Sammy Pak, like
yeah.
I think she was the wife in that family, yeah, or she was part of that family, and so basically he got that family to give him a lot of money. So, you know, that was kind of like their Series A funding, you know, and yeah, and otherwise he just religiously guilts people into working for him constantly.
Were your parents ever paid?
You know, the way it works is they got a small stipend, but basically you don't really have a personal income if you work for the cult. Some people actually work day jobs, but they were still, their heads were in the cult, you know. But my parents were all in. They worked and they, you know, they were believers. And they pretty much, we just, you know, we got a house, actually, like everyone in New York, we lived on like church properties, basically. There were like compounds. My family, I think because my parents were some of the earliest members, and I guess my mom just really knew how to like sell herself and what she did. We actually were living on an estate in Tarrytown, New York. So in that sense, my family had it pretty good. But at the same time, like, you know, living near the Moons means that everyone in town knows about it, and the Moons are like the boogeymen. And I was just like terrified of like going to school every day. I didn't want anyone to find out. I could barely look anyone in the eye. Like, it sucked. So that's just something I have to deal with, you know. So it was this cult town, you know, this cult was just looming. I'm sure there's like other stories like that. Yeah.
So you grew up essentially with them. So like you guys lived in an estate. So I know that they had an estate in Tarrytown, but there were other ones like, so there were like big estates on a compound, or did you grow up in their estate at a certain point, or?
So I grew up, I didn't, like, no one really lived with the Moons unless you worked for them, unless you were like, you know, basically like a daycare type person or security. Like, those are only people I think that got to live, you know, in the vicinity. Actually, I don't think they even lived with them. The Moons had a giant estate in Tarrytown, which is now turned into a museum of the Unification Church, which is, you know, just chock full of magical thinking captions. Yeah. Well, you know, they're just trying to keep the money rolling. But yeah, no, I lived on a church property that was maybe 3 or 4 miles from the Moon Estate. So that town was just kind of this pressure cooker. It was like ground zero for the Unification Church. And like, so I would see the Moons give speeches and stuff more often. And whereas anyone else like around the country or the world, if Moon came, it was like the most glorious thing. And, you know, everyone's like, oh my God, be on your best. And like, it was this incredible opportunity, you know? So, so to me, I just saw them as like, as a kid, I saw them more as like politicians. Like I never, no, I mean, okay, I guess I did believe Moon was the Messiah as a kid, as I was conditioned to. But, you know, looking back, there was something in me that was like, I know who these people really are, and they are not trustable. They're toxic and violent, and like, I want nothing to do with them.
Teddy goes on to tell me that he basically just needed to play the game in order to survive. That's what it was like growing up in the Moonie cult. I mean, he's a kid coming into his own, but living in a fight or flight type mode of obedience or else. Play the game or else.
Yeah, so I mean, that's why I feel obligated to talk about it now, because I'm like, you know, there's still people who are like, no, but that one Moon kid was good, right? And I'm like, no, he was like one of the most violent ones. He just knew how to save face in front of the camera and like be charming, you know, narcissist, basically. It's narcissism. Just people who know how to win people over, but
okay,
then behind closed doors. Yeah. Huh?
That's how I kind of felt when I was watching Sean. So that's interesting that you say that, because I would love to know what all those... So, like, I can totally see that those kids were obviously spoiled brats and treated like royalty or whatever. That was a pressure cooker to make just, like, a kid that needed a lot of attention, number one, because apparently he didn't. Yeah. He only saw his parents, you know, 2 weeks out of the year or whatever, but was also revered and also given so much money and stuff. But
yeah.
At the same time... I mean, I'm not gullible. I mean, I research this stuff all day long and whatever, but I am still sort of like, I'm a very sensitive person. And at certain points when I was Sean, I'm like, hey, he's kind of likable. Like, all right. Like,
mm-hmm.
So like, it's not that I would ever fall for whatever he's talking about, but I'm like, he doesn't seem like a bad guy. You know, like, it's so easy to get kind of sucked in with just like he almost seems at certain points in that documentary, and then I've watched some other of his stuff and listened to some of his podcasts, where I'm just like, he almost seems weirdly humble, but I think he knows how to play it.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's it. I mean, I feel like he's kind of like his dad in that way. You know, he's just like, I don't know. I see that too. I see that code switch in him. But I'm just like, damn. I know that works on people, you know, and he's like, I've gotten comments in my Instagram about, you know, my A&E appearance, where like someone's like, this guy, this cult took over my whole town. I can't even like get a job anymore because he's convinced all the locals to like, you know, look at me like I'm the enemy now. So that's kind of why I speak out about it. I'm like, on a local level, you know, and plus he has all these kids that who grew up in it, and that's all they know. So they're going to, you know, stick to their tribe. I know what that's like, and I know what it's like to lose that. And it sucks to like lose your creed and your tribe. And it's like our culture, you know? So part of me getting in touch, back in touch with ex-Moonies is like, is also to satisfy that. Like, I kind of miss that sense of like, oh yeah, we all know, we all shared this together, you know? So anyway, yeah, so I understand.
Yeah,
how,
I find that a lot with, like, there was a girl, so there's the part of the 12 tribes, which is also in that A&E series. They're probably an hour and a half north. It's kind of taken over this town of Manitou Springs, Colorado. And I would go because we're building a house, long story short. And uncomfortable for me to work a lot of the time because we have to like sleep at my father-in-law's house on his ranch nearby when he's in town, whatever. So I'd go get hotels and stuff, and I just happened to be staying at this hotel in Manitou Springs, and people were telling me there's a cult in the town. And so someone said that the girl that works at the front desk used to be in the cult, and so I interviewed her anonymously. I just kind of wrote up what she said because she didn't want to be named. But there was a very big part of like, she was happy to not be in the cult, but she really missed those people, and she kind of missed the routine. It's like, it does seem like it's a very, like, she's like, a, you know, she's probably close to 40 or something. Like, she's an adult, but it's like, she only left maybe 4 years ago, but she still feels, it's not like she wants to go back, but it seems like almost like a divorce of sorts, or like a leaving of something that's a part of you. I can imagine that would be very hard.
Yeah, absolutely. It totally is. It was, you know, we had our summer Bible camps, you know, like you mentioned in your podcast, Camp Sunrise. Like, I mean, it was, you know, I think I specifically remember telling them, like, I want you guys to show, like, the good parts of this so it doesn't seem like we went to, like, a prison camp or something. Like, Camp Sunrise was mostly good memories. It was just these long, exhaustive lectures that, you know, and there was that 1 year in 1995 where they called it, like, hell training. Like, this camp's going to be hell. And, one of the, what was it? I think it was, like, the nephew of Reverend Moon or something was running it, and he just had this, like, military high. Like, he liked to be, like, military-like. So, you know, he made us do, like, corporal punishment type exercises and stuff, you know. That was mostly what you saw in that documentary. So most of it is like, we just play basketball or go swimming, or, you know, you bond, you have those conversations with your friends, and group discussion, which is like you talk about your spiritual life or whatever, you know. It's just, it, in a lot of ways, it's just like any other camp. You're just like kids away from their parents, and you're like, woohoo, like, you know, I don't know. But in another sense, you're also being looked over by this, like, authoritarian religious organization. So, you know, but either way, like, it bonds you. And, you know, I've done a lot of research on, you know, studies about, you know, the power of cults and why and whatever. And, you know, one of the things that really bonds people is going through difficult experience together. Like that, they really exploit the hell out of that. And that's pretty much what a cult is. They just make you go through that, and then they reap the benefits on top, you know, of all the money you're making or whatever, the value you're bringing. And what you get out of it is you bond with those people you suffer through it with, you know? So I don't know. It's, a mixed bag, but, you know, I love my friends.
Yeah.
And I have to say, like, it was a very diverse group. Now I kind of look back at it in with kind of a smirk, and I'm like, oh, we were all being trafficked together. Like, look at this great bond. But no, at the same time, it, like, no, growing up in a very,
if you can't laugh at it, but
yeah, pretty much. So, but no, I just hope that now in their adulthood that they're, you know, I feel like most of us, well, we all talk online. We all just express, you know, I think we've all built confidence and, you know, having those risky conversations that we learned aren't risky anymore, because we all feel the same way. We're all in this gray area of, yeah, I miss a lot of things. And, you know, I'm glad I had, I guess, a village that raised me, but at the same time, it was an abusive village. So mixed feelings. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about, or a lot if you want, about the Moon Kids. They have to be a fascinating and very troubled bunch. It is very sad, the tragedies that happened to them and the way their lives went. But tell me about them, and then we can circle into Sean Moon. Because, and I want to say I really, really admire you for getting on the horn and, like, warning people about that blessing ceremony. And, you know, because you're 100% right, like what you said in that documentary, like, it could just take, you know, one wolf kid or whatever is, or maybe it was Sam that said, I don't know, one of you guys said it, that's like, you know, you don't just start handing guns into kids who have a bunch of hormones and, like, are, could be depressed or mentally ill or temporary, like, you know. And I also eventually want to talk about I'm so sorry what happened to your mom, but let's go into the kids and Sean first.
Okay, yeah. So when I was, you know, at my age, like, when I was growing up in Tarrytown, I was in Tarrytown, New York. It was like elementary, middle school age. And by this time, a lot of the Moon children were already adults. So this was like Preston Moon, who has his own splinter group of the church, and there was another one, Steve Moon, Hyojin Moon. He was pretty scary. He had that book, In the Shadow of the Moons, written about him by his ex-wife, who had to escape him because he was so abusive. And you played some excerpts from that 60 Minutes show, and I was like, nice. I'm glad you got that in there. I show that to a lot of people.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, that guy was, like, he would just, you know, we would hang out on church properties, and all the church properties had security booths in the front. It was really, like, mafia-like, you know? And, I mean, they're very much like a mafia family, pretty much. And so we would just hang out, like, on the Belvedere, you know, estate or, you know, whatever other church property. And sometimes the Moon kids would show up. And the older ones, like, if it was after church and we're all just hanging out, then, like, if they walked into a room, it was, like, military. We all had to, like, stand up. Like, let's say it's Hyojin, Steve Moon, or Preston Hyunjin Moon. Not Hyungjin Moon, which is Sean Moon, but without the G. Like, they would just walk in, and we'd all stand up, and then it was literally like a military. They'd be like, all right, you can sit down. And so we all sit down, and we'd have to listen to their talk. They were very much politicians. I think they just always had to play that role. So they always spoke like these great, like, heavenly things versus satanic things, or they talk about, like, how evil the world is, or I don't know, but they also want us to do well in school, and, you know, like, kind of typical, you know, study hard and be the best.
Were they older than you? Sorry.
Yeah, these were the ones who were, these were the ones who were, like, maybe 10 years older than me, 10, 12 years older than me, yeah. So, like, they were, yeah, they were in their, like, late
20s. Like, was that off of instinct that you just knew to stand up and then listen, or were you instructed at some point by someone or them to stand up when they enter the room, sit down when they say, like, was that told to you, or was that, like,
I think we were just,
I don't know, like,
we were just following our parents. Like, that's what our parents do. We were all, they, Reverend and Mrs. Moon told us to call them true parents, right? So we were all, like, children. Mm-hmm. Our parents were, like, infantilized to, like, submit to that. Yeah, I mean, it's very much cult, like, you know. So there was that.
Wow.
Or, yeah, and, like, there were, I had never seen it in person, but there was always talk of, like, oh, who got beat up this time? And, like, you know, so, like, I knew maybe about 7 or 8 kids who got beat up for just, you know, because these kids were just, like, wildly toxic and spoiled their whole lives, and full-grown adults were bowing to them ever since they were babies. Like, if you corrected them, or if you weren't familiar with the Moons, and, like, you were new in town, and you were just, like, someone corrected one of the Moons one time. I think it was Preston Moon. He said, yeah, you know, the top colleges are this and that, and, like, this kid was like, actually, the top college is this other one. And he got pulled aside, and he just got beat up. Like, it was nasty. It's like, you know, like Goodfellas. When I saw Goodfellas, I was like, oh yeah, that's exactly like the Moons. Or Succession, I was like, oh my God, this is exactly like the Moons. And I even, like, posted about it, like, online. Like, yep, this is what it was like. So, yeah, it was just this weird, it was this den. And our parents, too, just, like, accepted it. Like, my mom was like, oh, you know, this one member got beat up because blah, blah, blah. You know, he shouldn't have said that. You know, it's like being in an abusive family and, you know, not realizing it. Like, a lot of kids, I think they don't realize that it's not normal until they meet other people. And I think that's why the cult wanted us to stay inside, so we didn't have nothing to compare it to, you know, it keeps their power. So, like, you know, luckily that didn't happen too often. Yeah, I think the Moons mostly went to the city. We were in Tarrytown. It was just, like, boring-ass suburbs. But they were going to the city, and Hyojin had his own music studio that we actually helped build for free, and, like, at the Manhattan Center and the New Yorker Hotel. And I don't know. The other kids were probably doing other stuff. And anyway, going to Harvard or whatnot. They probably bought their way into Harvard. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, there's a lot of those kids that went to Harvard. I'm like,
mm. like also that one son, Preston, he there's a story online. There's a whistleblower site called How Well Do You Know Your Moon. It's on Tumblr, and yeah, it talks about how you know, he made people do his homework, and like or actually no, I don't think this was the story that's on there, but there's similar stories. But someone I know who grew up in the Moonies too, she told me like her brother used to help him do his homework, and one time he forgot to do it, or he didn't get it all right or something, and Preston Moon he stripped him naked in the middle of the highway and left him there in the middle of winter to walk home. Yeah, evil stuff.
Oh my god,
that was we just tried to dodge that whenever we could. But it was weird because whenever Hyojin showed up, like if we were playing like baseball or something, we'd all be like, oh, it's Hyojin, the great Hyojin. Like, I'm sure anyone from a country where there's like a feudal family who leads it, like, it's similar feelings of like, oh, we're so happy. Wow, they're here. But then really deep down inside, you're like, don't fuck this up. Don't do anything wrong where they're going to like hit you or like humiliate you, you know? It's intimidating. Glorious.
As an adult now and being like far away from it, like, I can see why, like, you know, as a kid and being involved in it, and even your parents as adults. And I always say this on my podcast, like, I don't think that anyone is immune to being sucked into a cult. I don't think anyone is too smart to whatever. Like, I think they know how to get you at your most vulnerable. They know what they're doing. Like, you're like, I consider myself a very smart person, a very confident person, but I'm not sure. Because half the time when I, like, research this stuff, and even when I watch Sean, I was like, this doesn't seem that bad. Like, at certain points, I'm just like, God, Rachel, shut your brain off. Like, it's, they know what they're doing. They're following a playbook. But now, though, that you're an adult and you're out of it, do you kind of, like, because sometimes, like, I like to make fun of these people a lot on my podcast, where I'm just like, is it kind of like you're just, like, almost embarrassed for them? Like, I don't know, like, can you laugh about it now, sort of just like, dude, you're not that cool, sir. you're not that cool. Did you ever get that feeling sometimes?
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I absolutely also see it as like these kids grew up in a toxic pool of, you know, in their own toxic pool. They had to grow up with their father who thought he was the second coming of Jesus and could do no wrong. So, you know, they had a lot of abuse as well. You know, there's some stories of, you know, maybe there were some weird spiritual beliefs around sex. And when you're a family that is, you know, seen as a messianic family, and there are weird sexual rituals around that, you can bet that some of those kids were molested, you know. I believe that. I don't know clearly. There's never been confirmation, but there's a lot of talk around it, especially with their friends. It's really sad, and it just explains everything of how they got so just turned into monsters, you know. It's really awful. But, you know, so it's mixed feelings.
I believe that.
Yeah, I think what it means to stick with it for them is, like, they, you know, if they left it, then all these people who bow at their feet and give them money and everything, you know, they're not special outside of that, you know. So I think it's a hard thing to walk away from. There was one older sister in the family, Eunjin Moon, who was in that 60 Minutes episode who you saw. I believe she like walked away with her like horse riding instructor or something. I think he was pretty well off, so she found an exit, I guess. I think for maybe she just wanted to get away from it. And I think especially for the men in the family, because it's a very patriarchal, misogynist cult, so like it's probably harder for them to leave, you know, whereas the women are, you know, probably getting abused in other ways, or I don't know. They have their problems too, and they're also want to keep the power as well, you know, more or less. But anyway, no, I mean, I speak out about it now because of, the extreme political climate. That's kind of why I talk about it, and everything Sean Moon is advocating. I'm like, that's what I saw rising up. And that's why I speak about it now. I was going to do a bigger thing, like a graphic novel or something that was like, you know, a more long-term project. But when I saw, like, you know, leading up to the 2016 election, the kind of things that were like open and confident, like these rallies in Charlottesville and whatnot, it's like, I was like, I got to talk about this now because this cult feeds that. They're like another Koch brothers, you know, they feed like this radicalism and this, like, they're nationalists too. Like the Washington Times is like, there's white supremacists who write for the Washington Times, like, and it's the Korean church leader. So it's like, what, like, anyway, it's all fascism to me. So, yeah.
It's terrifying. And you actually have, and if you're okay with talking about it, I know you got really choked up on the documentary and feel free to tell me no, or however you feel, but you growing up around the Moons and seeing that, you know, guns were cool. That actually affected your own family. Do you want to tell that story? If not, I totally understand.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's why I spoke out, too. You know, I saw these pictures with Sean Moon and his congregation with guns. And I was like, I know that vibe. Like, I know that ether. And so, I mean, my family living in Tarrytown on that estate, it was an estate in the woods. So Hyojin, who I spoke about earlier, like he would come, you know, with a crew of other church members with rifles, and they would just go hunting in the woods, you know, they would hunt for deer or whatever, and they did their thing. You know, that's fine. I think hunting's okay. But yeah, these kids whose fathers were all on world missions around the world and had, you know, no understanding of, like, you're supposed to be there to raise your kid. They just think, oh, we're doing the work of God because that's, you know, what the cult leader tells them to do. And, oh, the cult will take care of your kids, or your wife will do it, or, you know, other people. So I kind of grew up in like almost like a home daycare situation with like a rotation of church members every few years. Like, that was our home situation. So no one was really giving us, like, you know, rules. We all tried to be good and religious or whatnot, but, you know, my oldest brother, he actually assumed that position of being like dad. Like, there's a lot of church families like that where they have to be dads because the dad's not there. So, like, I think he just was, I don't know. A lot of those older boys, they got into like killing little animals and stuff. They took pictures of them like chopping up the animals and stuff. I don't know. It's pretty gruesome. And, you know, I've learned later that in other cults too, like Jim Jones was like that, Jeffrey Dahmer, they would kill and torture little animals, you know, when they were younger. It's just like a bad sign, some kind of like psychopathy or
it's
something
like
that.
McDonald triad. Yeah, I don't know. They've kind of done away with the McDonald triad, but I think there is still some truth to that. McDonald triad is like in your youth, if you are killing and harming animals, it's something about bedwetting late into life. But that can also just be the sign of a neglected or abused kid. That's why I think they've kind of, I can't remember what the third thing is. Oh, fire set, like arson as a kid, like being on fire or lighting things on fire. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, I'll have to look into that.
Yeah. But and I don't know that it's totally like by the book anymore, but most like serial killers and narcissists, like real bad cult leaders and stuff, like a lot of them were unnecessarily killing little, like, I think the animal thing is the one that's like the biggest, at least for me. Like, I can see little boys being into fire and just like, well, like, you know, like when I have to burn boxes out here in like a burn barrel, I'm kind of like, oh, fire's kind of fun. Like, I think that's like slightly more normal. And I think that the bedwetting is probably a sign that they were maybe abused themselves. But it's the harming of little animals, I think, that I find the most alarming, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting because my best friend as a little kid, who was also growing up in the Moonies, like, he wet the bed until a late age. So that's interesting you say that. Yeah. So,
I mean,
yeah.
That could be a sign of other things, but you know, who knows?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so they just, and it's interesting because also in other online support groups for people who left cults, like someone else asked one time, is like, is harming little animals and like, you know, killing them, is that a cult thing? And I was like, oh, that's weird that you say that. Like, that's what happened in the cult I grew up in. But anyway, the point is, like, you know, they played with guns, and they just, you know, it was just this thing, I guess, made him feel, I don't know if it was like an anger outlet or just like, I don't know, just no, I guess it's maybe toxic masculinity, I don't know, or just like, just no fathers around, and they're just like, I don't know, being experimental or whatnot. And anyway, but yeah, so, yeah, sadly, one night, my brother, I think he thought it was a deer or something. My mom was, you know, she had like a kind of a garden in on that estate. It was like a mini garden, and she pruned some of the trees that were kind of in the woods. So she was like pruning this one tree, and my brother, I guess, from across the yard just couldn't see her, and he just heard a rustle and, you know, just, yeah. Of course, the worst thing that could happen happened, and, you know, it's a miracle that she stayed alive. He could drive at the time, thank God, and he just drove her, you know, straight to the hospital. It's two shots. And I remember my brother just came up and, well, you know, I mentioned it in the documentary. I couldn't believe it. I was in shock. It's just something we all live with now. And it's this heavy weight in our family. You know, we all get along as a family for the most part. You know, of course, besides the fact that my parents are, they left the church they stepped like one step out of it. And now they're into like far right stuff. And, you know, they unfortunately, I think they're in QAnon now. I don't know where they stand on that fully, but they just kind of, you know, that's what they knew for like several decades, just that kind of far-right nationalism and zeal, they found it in something else, you know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think they cult hopped, you know, pretty much. That's what they call it, cult hopping. It happens. And
I've heard that happens, actually. Yeah. That's actually not that uncommon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Oh, I just feel like if that's what you know, like, your body tends to become, like, programmed into something in general. Like, it's almost like, you know, how, like, your body will, like, store trauma and stuff, you know, and it may come out in ways that you don't really know. But I think if, like, you spent the better half of your life in this sort of organization, like, that's just kind of what you know. So you're going to be more susceptible to, like, fall into that, you know?
Yeah, a good friend of mine who's also an ex-Mooney activist, she said, like, was it from the time you're 18 to 25, or, like, those are kind of the years where it really molds you into, like, the adult you're going to be for the rest of your life. And, you know, that's why they get them in college. They got my mom and dad when they were maybe, like, 18, 19 years old or something. So that's why there's so many cults on college campuses, because they do well there. And, you know, these kids have just left the nest, and they don't really know what's going to happen financially, or they're probably looking for security, and it's kind of a vulnerable experimental time. So it's,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hate that. And I wish there were more regulations against that on college campuses, but it's that versus the freedom of religion, you know, emphasis in the US. So it's hard. It's a tough one. It's hard. Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. Curious, and we can like hop off fairly soon, but I'd like to stay, you know, connected with you, because I think you're very smart, very interesting. And you said you kind of were thinking about writing a book at a certain point. Would you ever, like, when you mentioned QAnon, it kind of popped into my head, because I've never really looked into that. Would you ever want to, like, partner on an episode about that? Because I've never really looked into that, and that is kind of like, so basically on my podcast, I do like a lot of cults, or like I started kind of with like televangelists that take advantage of people. I've also just branched off into like, I'm helping this mom whose daughter was murdered, but they ruled it an accidental overdose. I don't know how you OD with no drugs in your system, frozen naked and put yourself into a residential trash bin. But anywho, obviously she was murdered, but it's a cover up in Buffalo, New York.
All
right. So I do other things too, but yeah, but QAnon would be one I'd like to look into if you want to like I don't know. Like, if you want to get more of your, like, story out or, like, do more work on this, I'd be more than happy to, like, you know, talk with you more and stuff. Like, you have, you know, more knowledge than I do, at least firsthand.
I've watched, like, a documentary or two about them. I don't keep my head in it, like it's not, like, the number one thing I do with my life. I just feel like I've lived kind of a similar, you know, I lived in the same ether pretty much. So, like, the magical thinking thing where it's, like, you don't really look up any evidence or anything before. You just trust what the leader says. Yeah, I mean, I could chime in and maybe just, like, you know, speak to it according to, because, like, the Moonies are, like, yeah, it's very, I mean, there's probably a lot of QAnon Moonies out there. I don't know. But, yeah, it's practically the same thing to me. So, yeah.
And Sean actually went to that, that thing at the Capitol building. He was there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's proudly there. He's posted
on
Instagram.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and it's crazy, right? That, I mean, did you put it together that, like, his dad's birthday is January 6th? I was like, I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know.
No, not. Whoa.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to make any claims, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised because, like, you know, was it, like, Reagan? Like, he read the Washington Times every day. Like, I don't know. There's just, I feel like they're way more, like, influencing things in the government that people believe. But they are losing money now after the Shinzo Abe thing. So, you know, hopefully that dries them out. We'll see.
Yeah. Is there one leader of QAnon? I haven't, like, totally, like, looked into it at all, but, like, there's not one charismatic leader, right? It's just sort of, like, group of people online. It's almost like an incel group, sort of. Not they have similar ideologies, actually, but there's not one incel leader. It's just a group of people that have the same beliefs that kind of all coordinate online.
No, it's like, you know, yeah, it started on 4chan. It's just like some kind of, I don't know. I don't think they planned on getting this big, but I listened to a podcast about it. I don't know if you know Cult Podcast. It's just like those two comedians, Armando and Paige, and they, you know, they just research the hell out of cults and then just talk about it. And they make funny comments and stuff. But, yeah, I think it just rolled out of 4chan. You know, 4chan was, like, the most unregulated. I think it was started by a teenager. So, like, it was just unregulated and, like, there was no sense of, you know, adult supervision. And, you know, which was fun in some ways, but then, you know, very toxic and kind of unhinged in a lot of other ways. So. Yeah, I guess that's where it rolled out of. Yeah.
Yeah, 4chan is
a mystery.
Terrifying.
Huh?
That's where a lot of 4chan is terrifying. And I feel like Sean Moon's group could, like, attract someone like an Elliot Rodgers and just be like, oh, okay, now we got religious justification for it.
Well, I mean, there was one guy. Yeah. Do you know about Nicholas Skolstad?
No, who's he?
So I think it was maybe two years. Maybe 2 years ago, he's probably like in his like mid 30s now, or late or early 30s. He's part of Rod of Iron Ministries, and he lived in Dobbs Ferry, New York, and he snapped. He was part of Sanctuary Church, now called Rod of Iron Ministries, and he was just driving down the road, and he you can look this up. It's on the news. I could send you the article after. And he rammed into a Metro North vehicle, like a transportation authority vehicle. And he came out and he screamed like, I am Jesus or something like that. And basically, I don't know. I think he rammed into it like a few times. Like he just like rammed it off the road. And then they searched his car. The police searched his car and he had a kill list of like, you know, probably politicians and stuff. Yeah. So this guy is exactly what I was talking about before. It's like, I don't think Rod of Iron Ministries is going to do some kind of like military, you know, armed attack. I think it's going to be the one-off mentally ill people or the more fanatical, you know, that are the scared, those are the things who are trying to prove themselves or who are traumatized enough. And, you know, like Sean Moon, he is traumatizing these children. What I heard from like one of his training camps, you know, he does these training camps. That it's a lot like Dave Koresh and his like arming his, you know, soldiers of God or whatever. So part of this training camp thing is like they have to like they have to slit the throat of a chicken. Like, so they have to get used to that, you know, and like, I can understand that, like, okay, maybe farmers do that. Farmers' kids will do that because that's part of that. But when you combine it with this, like, you know, fucking terrible, just like, you know, soldiers of God philosophy and that, you know, we're doing this to, because this is the righteous world, whatever. It's just like, you're making, oh God, that's awful. And I hope some people escape and we'll talk about this because I know those kids are going to, some of them are going to get smart and get the hell out of there and be like, what the fuck? Like, you know, cause just like our generation, cause we always do. Cause like we're in this country where, you know, you can read books and you can, I don't know. So I place faith in those kids and that's why I speak out.
Yeah.
Huh?
But there's a difference between like having to kill a chicken out of necessity, and a farmer's kid knows that. I mean, I live on a ranch now, which I lived in LA for like 13 years, so like I'm newly living on a ranch. I don't have chickens myself, my neighbor does, but I do understand it. I also grew up in a small town, my dad was a logger, and like I get there's a difference between, and my dad was
right.
a hunter as well, but that only yep. hunted deer, then we ate it, like it wasn't like, you know,
yeah,
there
fine.
Is no like farmers' kids understand that, like,
right.
and that they're probably sad half the time when, like, they don't want to have to kill their chicken or whatever. Like, it's not like
yeah.
this savage imagery of, like, oh, but you might have to do this to your enemy, so let's start learning it with the chickens. It's like, no, they just understand that, like, that's the way that they're eating. That's what's happening. You know, it's,
right. well,
it's a completely different thing.
Yeah, it comes back around to that. You know, what we were talking about before about, like, you know, killing little animals being, like, a bad sign, you know, of, like, these kind of sociopathic people or who just are detached from empathy or, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what he's planting in their heads in those moments of terror, probably for a lot of them. You know, I don't know how young these kids are when they're, like, killing these chickens. You know, I saw and I recognize that
terrible.
He's frying.
And I'm pretty sure I'll tell you. I'm not even sure that's how you harvest a chicken. I don't know that you slit their throat. Like, I mean, maybe, but I bet Sean doesn't even know what he's talking about. Like he's
no.
doing it as like a do they eat the chicken afterwards? That would make me feel better. Like, you know.
I would hope so. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. Oh, I didn't even talk about how he was as a kid, huh? Yet.
Oh yeah, yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about him as a kid? Like. Were there
okay.
warning signs?
So, I mean, yeah, just from day one, this kid was, all the Moon kids had different kind of characteristics about them. They all were like, almost like, you know, one of those superhero teams where they all have a different power. Like, they had different characteristics. Like, you know, Hyojin Moon was like, he was in the metal band and he was kind of violent and whatever, but it was weird. But he was also, like, loyal to his friends, like, in the church. So, I don't know. He was a mixed bag. And then Preston Moon, who the guy who beat up that one guy for not doing his homework, he was, like, just all about, like, looking pretty and or looking handsome. And then, like, behind closed doors, he was a scary asshole. Sean Moon, yeah, he always came in pairs. It was him and his brother. Sadly, Youngjin Moon, who you mentioned in one of your episodes, he killed himself. He's the one from in Reno who jumped from that hotel room. So, mm-hmm. you know, they were always together because they were the closest in age. And so Youngjin, who or Philip Moon, he was actually kind of nice. There was like two Moon brothers who were nicer, and they both died young. And Hyungjin, who died in that car accident, he also was kind of gentle. Like, it was hard to believe because these were Moon kids who had all the power in the world in this cult. But yeah, like, so Philip Moon, he would play like Dungeons and Dragons with the kids. He was just always kind of had a mellow tone about him, you know. But then he was always paired with Sean Moon, who, you know, Hyungjin Moon, who was just kind of loud, and he would just like bully kids. I don't know. It was weird. Like, they would go to this one compound called Jacob House, and that's in Tarrytown, New York, and they were, you know, one of them would play Dungeons & Dragons with everyone, and the other one would make them humiliate themselves for him. Like, he would make them fight each other for his own pleasure, or he would, like, lock them in a closet until they cried, or...
Sean would do that?
You know, yeah, Sean would do that, or, and he always had, like, this, like, plastic sword, and he was, like, hitting kids with it, and, like, parents couldn't do anything because he was, like, spiritual royalty, so, like, they didn't stop him, and these kids were all just being abused and harassed by this kid, and, like, their parents could do nothing. Like, can you imagine that? Like, it's just so, you know. So
it's weird for a parent to be also controlled by, like, a kid, essentially.
Like, yeah, I know. That's the worst part. So I'm just like, you know, I'll tell the world about this stuff, you know, because I saw it. I was there. And, yeah. And he just, I don't know. He got away with it. Yeah. And so, like, we all just kind of stayed away from him. I was a tiny bit older than him, and you know, in the church there was age was hierarchy, because that's kind of an Asian thing. Like, even with my own brothers, even though we're not Korean, we called each other, like, I called my older brother, like, David Hyung. Like, Hyung means older brother, or Nuna means older sister. So, like, I would always add those to, like, you know, the end of their names. Like, we did that growing up in the Moonies. So yeah, so, like, I don't think he messed with me because I was a little bit older, but also I think because I kind of grew up around there, and, like, I just knew to stay away from him. So, I, you know, somehow he just never got near me. I don't know. But, yeah, the younger kids he messed with. But then there was another time,
that
actually,
where... It
is
very strange, though, that he can come across, like, I can see him being loud. I can see him needing a lot of attention. I can see him thinking he's some sort of star of sorts, you know?
Yeah,
like he's being theatrical, but like, but like I said, like at certain points, like he does kind of seem a bit affable, but that is a huge red flag. That's like he was trying to shame kids and like got pleasure out of their pain and stuff. Like that is a very scary red flag.
It is, yeah. And there was I knew those kids, the Jacob House kids, we call them, like, pretty well, and they would tell me about it and stuff. Actually, in adulthood, you know, when we all grew up, and, like, this is where I always knew he was a jerk, but I didn't know, like, specifically. I mean, I saw bits and pieces of it, but the full stories were, like, you know, if I lived there, like, God forbid, like, that would be awful to have to face this guy all the time. But, like, Sean Moon, one of the kids who lived there as an adult, he told me, like, one time someone stood up to him and, like, called him a jerk or something, like, really small, and like he just, you know, he commanded other kids to beat up that kid, but then he like went into the corner and like cried or something. Like he is so fragile, you know. Yeah, like that's where it comes from. And you know, and I remember this other time I went to his like rarely, maybe once a year or less, like the Moons would invite us to their house or their estate. And we'd have like a dinner, like in their like banquet ballroom kind of, you know, really fancy, whatever. Like I remember, so we went there one time and I remember like, we were just kind of walking around, it was the more kind of public, building on their property. And then they have their like little smaller mansion where I think they all live too. But anyway, so, yeah, we went for one of their events, and then we were just kind of hanging out in the hall, and Sean Moon was, like, walking around. I was maybe, like, 12 or 13, and, Sean saw that, I guess, we were the little bit older kids, so he invited us to his bedroom, and, like, he was playing this one album from this, like, glam band that I never heard of, and I think it's called, like, Firehouse or something. And he was just like singing along, like, yeah. And he like wanted us to think he was cool, you know, like he was just like hungry for attention. And, you know, he was talking about, I don't know, like it was weird. Like when they wanted friends, when they were feeling friendly, they pretended we were all friends. But then I remember there was just like a TV in one of the rooms, and someone left the TV on, and it was TNT or something where they were playing a movie with Dolly Parton. And just kind of half jokingly, when they showed like Dolly Parton, you know, she is pretty well endowed up there. And I kind of just, I was a teenage kid, Yeah, so I was like, I blurted out like, whoa. And he like looked at me and he's like, what, why did you say that? Why did you say that? Like he was angry that I acknowledged some sexy thing. I was like,
as if he wasn't thinking it, but that's like the shame he was supposed to feel. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It just like, so, I mean, that was the thing in the Moonies, like sex was like worse than murder. Like that's basically what we were talking. We were like, if you have sex outside of marriage, then you're
cool. Except for, Sung Young Moon did.
Exactly.
Nan then you learn about cults. Husband did. The pairs what's her name? Yinjin, or whatever.
Yinjin, yep.
Pairs
yeah.
She did. Like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but I still see it. I mean, the little bits and pieces I've seen on Sean Moon giving lectures or like some of his paraphernalia. I don't like study his cult or whatever. It's too much for me. I'm just like, I don't have the tolerance for this. But the little bits and pieces I do see is just like, yeah, like, you know, it's the same purity message, the same misogyny and the same, like, you know, gay people are evil and whatever. And like, I don't know. But then at the same time, he also justified his dad's affairs. And he said it was like, there were spiritual reasons for it. He just repeated what his dad said about it. And it's just like, buddy, study other cult leaders and you'll see your dad is not special.
Thank you guys so much for listening. And I truly hope you enjoyed that deep dive on Sung Young Moon and the Unification Church and his offspring and the wild direction Sean Moon has taken it. I love you guys again and really truly thank you. Yeah, follow anything that Teddy Hose does, and yeah, I love you.